Hare Krishna. Well, does anyone have any questions or any suggested topic of discussion?
I have one suggestion.
Great.
Our guests, they never had any exposition before. Just good faith and some sprinkles that they're here.
Uh-huh.
But if you could explain a little bit what we are doing here, what's the purpose of our gathering, our school of thought, our initiation process, and what's the meaning of this initiation basically?
Okay, great. Well, if we can explain something as clearly as possible and as few words as possible, then we'll understand the best. Right? So, we can say that according to our teachings, we say, who am I? Right? Then in very shortly we can say, I am a servant of the Lord. And if we say, what is the purpose of my life? We will say, to love the Lord. And then we will say, and how do we do that? How do we perfect our life? How do we reach the fulfillment of life? We can say, by practicing devotion. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in our scriptures, it boils down the whole of scriptural thought to three words. Krishna, bhakti, prema. What is real? What exists? Krishna. Krishna means Krishna the person and what he creates. So Krishna, his creation, the souls, you know, like that. Then what is their relationship? What is the relationship between me and Krishna? The relationship is enjoyer and enjoyed. He is enjoying and I am being enjoyed by him. And what is the gist of that relationship, or over the course of that relationship, what types of feelings happen or what type of experience happens? Love. The greatest, like the when the relationship reaches its potential, then love is expressed. And that love is by nature fulfilling. If that love appears within our heart, then we are satisfied. Then we are fulfilled. That is the belief. Right? That love is synonymous with fulfillment. And that if we have that, then everything is okay. And maybe otherwise there may be imperfections externally, but it is of no consequence. Like yesterday we were telling a story, we were reading from Srila Govindamurti's book. We'll remind anyone, very nice, simple story. And it says that once, Lakshmi Devi, she's the goddess of fortune. She, whenever she goes somewhere, she flies on the back of an owl. Okay? And so she sometimes flies all over the universe, Earth and this planet and that planet and this heavenly planet and Vaikuntha and everywhere she goes. So her chauffeur, so to speak, her flying owl, seen it all. It's been to the spiritual world, been to heaven, been to earth, been here, been there, so many kings, so many Vaishnavs, so many sadhus, so many sacrifices, so many things that owl has seen. So once, and Lakshmi Devi, she's always has very, very great, like, what can we say? In colloquial speak, we can say she's gorgeous. Like, means she has the most beautiful makeup, the most beautiful jewelry, the most beautiful sari, the most delicate fingertips, the most soft, like, this little, you know, petal eyes, all of these things, the most you can imagine. And so, she has the most beautiful jewelry. And specifically, she had one very beautiful pearl necklace. So once she said to this owl, her friend, her carrier, she said, please go, and you can go anywhere you like. And when you see someone who is very, very beautiful, who's completely, perfectly beautiful, then put this garland of pearls around their neck. Okay? put the garland of pearls around someone who's perfectly beautiful. So then the owl, she's happy, and she starts to fly in the world. And she goes to this plane, she goes to that plane, she goes to heaven, she goes here, she goes there. She goes very, very far everywhere. But everywhere she looks and she sees so many beautiful things. But if she starts to measure, is this more beautiful than that? Right? Who I have to find not only something beautiful, but something that is the most beautiful. That implies measurement, right? Some analysis. So when the presence of that analyzing tendency is there, then always, though many things were very beautiful, some imperfection could be traced. Always some, oh, this person, very, very, very beautiful, very, very wonderful qualities, very, very nice. But somehow, anyhow, we don't know why, but when their body was made, their hair, it just starts a little too far back on their head. If that was just, if you could just tilt that down a little, oh, it would be right. Like, you know, anyhow, you can find some very subtle little adjustment necessary with anything. So she looked so far, but lastly, she couldn't find anything that was, that some little refinement couldn't improve. And eventually she became tired, hungry, thirsty, something like this. So she said, okay, I'm going to go home, I'm going to rest, and later I'll finish my job. So she came home, and she'd been gone a long time, she'd been traveling. And there, she saw her children. And her children were so happy. Oh, you came home after so long, mother. And she saw her children, and she said, they are perfectly beautiful. And gave the garland to the child. So Srila Govinda Maharaj explained this, and he said, why? He said, because when we look at something with love, we're not analyzing it. It's just the way it is, and we're appreciating that. So that is the nature of prem, or the nature of fulfillment, is that once we have it, however things may be, that's okay. We'll be satisfied by that. There won't be anything that can hinder our internal, nothing external, we'll be able to hinder our internal condition when we have that type of selfless love. So in the school of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that state of being is considered perfection or considered the goal. And all these practices, so many scriptures and temples and activities and rules and mantras and blah, 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 all this stuff is only to culture that. That someday that state of being, that one will just be that way. That is the goal. Right? And that state of being is reachable anywhere. You don't have to die and go to heaven. You don't have to be born in an Indian body. You don't have to be a man. You don't have to be a woman. You don't... No kind of external criterion is necessary to reach that state of being. So, in the association of one who has it, it may also come to us. Right? If we want... This is the central principle to acquire expertise or proficiency in anything, is if you are in the presence of someone expert and proficient, then very quickly you can also acquire that. Right? If you need some water, you can go to a river and you will get plenty of water. Right? If you go to where that thing is actually existing, then it's sure that you'll get it. So to acquire, to develop this, what we call prem, right? Then it's necessary to have the association of someone who has it. Right? We're not interested in the cultivation of theory. We're not interested in making a theory about spiritual life, or making up a new theory, or considering that these things are optional or hypothetical. We rather will consider this state of being, of having realization of the soul as a servant of the Lord, and the person who's filled with joy at every moment, engaged in the service of the Lord. That is reality. That is existing. And I want connection with that. I don't want to, spiritual life is not, oh, I will go to the cave, I will eat one carrot a day, and I will be very peaceful. That is not our idea. Rather, when we are in the company of a person who's living a spiritual life, then we will be in the proximity of the Spirit, so to speak. So for that, extreme emphasis is placed upon the association of a guru and also other practitioners or Vaishnavas, devotees. This is like, you know, how to make it, you know, more strong. You know, for example, and to put it in a very extreme way, once Srila Govinda Maharaj, when he was young, our Gurudev Srila Govinda Maharaj, okay, here, let's pause for a moment while Srila Acharya Maharaj comes. Jai Srila Bhakti Nirmala Acharya Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Okay. Ek Bhagavat Boro Bhagavat Shastra Ar Bhagavata Bhakta Bhakti Rasa Patra. The Vaishnava, or the devotee of the Lord, is described in the scriptures as a cup of devotion. If devotion is compared to some type of nectarian juice, then a devotee is a cup filled with that juice. So if you want some of that juice, you can collect it from the cup. And the Vaishnava is also described, as we pray to him every day, Bancha Kalpataru, as a wish-fulfilling tree. So if you are about to state the importance of having the association of a Vaishnava, then one will immediately appear. And this is the nature of Vaishnavas, that they, through them, all your desires will be fulfilled. Te prasade purve sarva ash. We sing in our song each day. By the grace of Guru, grace of the Vaishnavas, all our desires for devotion, for the service of the Lord, will be fulfilled. And the Lord himself said, Jame bhakta jana aparta name bhaktas tate jana mad bhaktanam tate bhaktas teme bhakta tamo mata. He says, one who wants to serve me, I am not considering him so great. But one who wants to serve my devotee, he is my greatest devotee. This is a statement of Krishna himself. So, in the company of the Vaishnavas, we will have some experience of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is not simply a place that a holy soul goes when one dies, when they die, right? But it is an environment in which everything is happening for the satisfaction of the Lord. So, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, within a mot, where you are now, within a temple like this, you can have some experience of the atmosphere of the spiritual world, where you can feel and observe all movement within the environment taking place for a central purpose, in an organized and like all elements coming and moving all in and around the center. So, in the mat, and even in Indian culture, even legally, the proprietor, the owner of this temple, is Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar. If you look on our legal documents, this is also a legal document, you will see, it says, you know, proprietor of this land and the name of the deities. They are the owner of the temple. And even many years ago, Bengal, you may know, now they're losing power, but for many years, there was a very powerful communist political group in Bengal. And they made laws that limited the amount of land that any one person could own. They wanted to minimize class divisions, so they made a cap that a single person cannot own more than, I don't know the amount, but some amount of land. What's that? 75 biga, there you go. So it came to be that the amount of land in the name of the deities was too much. it was more than one person could own, right? But the deity is a person, right? So then some challenge came in the court to the Mott, some local communist people. They wanted to possess some of the Mott's land. So then Srila Govindamarsh, he went to defend the Mott in court. And in court, he argued, he said, our land is the property of our deities, but we do not only have one deity, we have three. We have Mahaprabhu, we have Radharani, and we have Krishna. So they are all entitled to their share, what the communists say. One person can only have this much land, okay, then all three shall have their land. But it is also a fact that in Indian culture and traditional Vedic culture, women are not entitled to possess property. That is a Vedic principle, that the woman is the property of her husband, and the husband is the proprietor of all things within his house. So then they objected in the court, and they said, no, Mahaprabhu is there, Mahaprabhu can have his land, Krishna is there, Krishna can have his land, but Radharani, she is the lover of Krishna, then why shall she have her land? And then Srila Govindamarsh went into the scriptures, and on the basis of Rupanuga Siddhanta and Parakya Rasa, he established, well, in fact, Radha Krishna are not married. Radha Krishna are not married. So Radharani, she has her husband, and they are entitled to their amount. Krishna is entitled to his amount. Mahaprabhu is entitled to his amount. In this way, the Mott should be allocated at least the land suitable for three individuals. And he was victorious. But not without some challenge, right? He said that case went on for a few months, and in the course of that case, he lost 20 kilos. The court was in Kalna, which is a little over an hour from here by car or train, and he had to go almost every day by train, and stress, and lawyers, and many difficulties, but anyhow, lastly, he was victorious and healthy thereafter, and very happy with this situation. So, the Mott is a place in which everything belongs to the deity. So, the marble, the buildings, the resources, the money, the wood, the trees, etc., they belong to the deity. And this is sometimes difficult for people to understand. So they say the average is every 7 years or so, this area, the Ganges swells, and this area floods. And the highest it came, I heard, 1 year it came like about here, the flood. And 2000, it was an especially bad flood, because it was a flood and also one dam near Malda broke. So it was extra bad, so to speak. Anyhow, during the time of the flooding, then so many local people, they cannot live in their homes, they go on this bridge or elsewhere, and it's a very difficult situation, and they say, Jai Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. So at that time, many persons are unable to live at home, persons send food, it's a very difficult time, and especially many people here keep cows, where can the cows stay, what can the cows eat, very difficult time. So 1 year, not that year, but many years before, maybe in 60s or 70s, there was a flood. And during the flood, this whole area was filled with water, and some banana trees, they tied together to make a raft, and then they would take one tree like this and push on the ground, and on top of the banana raft they would go between the buildings and here and there, right? So one day, Srila Govindamarsh, he's going through the Mott, and he's going in the back over here, and he sees someone coming and chopping down a banana tree in the back of the Mott. And, hey, what are you doing? What is this? You know, and that man, he caught, right? He's stealing the tree, but he's caught. And he says, oh, my cows are so hungry. What can I do? I must help my cows. They are so hungry. Please, I need to take this tree. Please be merciful. You are sadhu. Please bless me. Let me take this tree. Like making some sweet words. And Srila Govindamarsh said, oh, You are coming to me, you are asking me very sweetly to take this tree. Yes, yes, please, please be merciful. Allow me to take this tree. And Srila Govinda says, I see. So when you wanted to come to me to politely ask for this tree, you came to the front of the mat, you knocked on the door to ask me, or you came from behind with your knife and started to cut the tree hiddenly. Right? Saying, you know, implying to him, you're only making a show of like this, you're actually stealing my tree. I am not taken by your sweet words. And then the man, he immediately changed again. Oh, you will not give me this tree? Then I will come back here at night when you are asleep and I will cut it down and take it then. You cannot stop me from taking this tree. And Srila Govinda Maharshi, he said, okay, go ahead. Get out of here now. You come back and I'll be here waiting for you tonight. Like, I take your challenge. He said, your nature is that of a thief. A thief's nature is to steal. My nature is I'm a guardian of my Guru Maharaj's mat. And my duty is to guard his mat. So you will act in your way and I will act in my way and I will see you tonight. And this way, but why did he do that? Oh, that man's cows are hungry. Why didn't he give him the tree? Right? Because that tree is the property of the deity. And even at the, you know, the principle being, even to give charity to the poor or the impoverished is part of the illusion of this world. But to utilize the resources of this world in the service of the Lord, that is truth. That is, we can say, true honesty or the proper application of things. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, the vision of a devotee is that everything in this world, how shall we see it? What will we consider it? Every last thing in this world is an ingredient that can be used to serve the Lord. That's how we will see the world. Everything is different types of materials, supplies that can be used to satisfy the Lord. That's what exists in this world. It is not that it is your property, my property, this and that. No. Everything is the Lord's property, and we may be so lucky as to have the chance to utilize some of the Lord's property in His service. That is the proper vision of existence. And that is the nature of the spiritual world. Everything is existing for the Lord's satisfaction, and every person there is using and moving only for that purpose. So in the mat, we get a glimpse of this sort of atmosphere, where, right, we are not eating anything. But after the deities have cooked, after they have offered to the deities, then we are taking the deity's prasad. Right? When we wake up in the morning, we are not flipping on the TV, you know, enjoying ourselves. We immediately wake up and we come to chant the glories of the deities. We immediately come to give pleasure to the deities. Right? And then we chant, and then throughout the day, we engage in service. So once, one Western devotee in Russia, I heard the story. He's like, I don't want to say the name, but like devotee person. His family is all devotees, and he's long time been associated with the devotees and Srila Govinda Maharaj. But he himself, he's known not so much a strict like practitioner, not always wearing Vaishnav clothes, not always going programs, things like this. But deep down, some Vaishnav things, right? So one day, he came in to see Srila Govinda Maharaj. Maybe 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, I don't know. Sometime in the morning, he came to pay his dandavat to Srila Govinda Maharaj. And Srila Govinda Maharaj welcomed him. And then, as their parting words, you know, he said, have you taken prasadam? You know, have you received prasadam this morning? And that man, he says, oh no. No, I have not taken prasadam. And then this is always a concern. For Srila Govinda Maharaj, it's always very important that proper prasadam is going on. So, oh, what happened? Did they not cook enough? Or was there some problem? Why haven't you taken any prasadam? You know, it was a little late in the day. And then that fellow, devotee, he said, oh, I have not done any service this morning. So, how can I take any prasadam? And Srila Govinda Maharaj was surprised. This person, known to be a little unconventional, not so serious, not practiced, you know, externally not following so much. But he told this word. He had this type of conception, that nothing should be taken unless it is being used for him. So why shall we eat? Why shall we live? For Him. That is why. If the purpose is not that it will indirectly or as in a chain of events produce in the future pleasure and satisfaction for Him, then why shall I consume any of His resources for myself? Right? So the fun, you know, boil that down. I am His. Right? What does that mean? I am His. This is the position of the soul. Jibarir Sharupai, Krishnar Nitya Das. I am an eternal servant of the Lord. That is the true identity of the soul. Amito Tomar, Tumi To Amar, Ki Kaje Apana Dhan. Means, I am yours and you are mine. What is the need for anything else? Not some complicated philosophy, we're not trying, no fancy words and new terms and ization and no. I am yours, you are mine, what is the use of anything else? Right? Who is Krishna? Right? We can say, you know, Param Brahma, the Absolute, you know, but really, you know, if we go to the heart of the matter, Krishna is the embodiment of joy. We could say Akila Rasamrita Murti, put in more simple language, he's the embodiment of joy. Which is to say that within him, all possible satisfaction exists. In connection with him, any possible form of satisfaction will be experienced. You know, which is to say, maybe many will be. Or to go further, maybe so much will be that nowhere else will you find such things. So, if we are in search of satisfaction, and Krishna is the embodiment or the origin of all satisfaction, right? Then if we go in any direction other than towards Him, will we find satisfaction? All satisfaction comes from here, you know. If I'm here and I walk this way, am I approaching satisfaction?
No.
That is the position between the soul and the Lord. The Lord is the origin of all things, all satisfaction. So the closer we come to Him, the more intensity of the greater our fulfillment is. The more we turn away from Him, the more we ignore Him, the less we find any fulfillment. And that is the cause of our position in this world. Krishna bahirmukhoya bhoga bancha kore nikatastamaya dhare japatiya dhare. Saying that those who turn away from Krishna and desire or think it's possible to enjoy or find satisfaction away from Him or anywhere other than Him, they fall into illusion. They come to this world. They experience what's known as sorrow. So the root cause of all possible dissatisfaction is aversion to Krishna. This is the basis. The root cause of not only every sorrow I've ever felt, but every sorrow that every other soul has ever felt comes from aversion to Krishna. Why is this man born with no legs? Why is this person born in such a poor family? Why is this person having this mental problem? Why so many issues? Why so much suffering? Why so much agony is going on? This is the original cause. This is the original cause. And only one other principle is needed to explain it. This principle and one other, and you can understand the whole thing. With the fewest pieces possible, we can make everything make sense. Okay? So one principle. Krishna is the embodiment of satisfaction. If you turn away from Him, you won't find satisfaction. Okay? That's principle one. Principle two, karma. Everyone already knows what karma is. Right? Śrīla Govinda Maharaj, he would like to use Isaac Newton's third law of motion. To every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. According to how you act, a corresponding result will come to you. Right? So, if you act well, something good will come to you. If you act bad, something bad will come to you. Not a complicated matter. So, if we turn away from the origin of all satisfaction, and we start moving in the opposite direction, what are we going to incur? Less and less and less satisfaction. And in the course of that, as we act, right, for every action we make, then a corresponding action comes. So if we take one step away, then it becomes one step worse. And if seeing that, we think, oh, if I continue in this direction, it will change. Then we get further in, we get further in, we get further in, until we enter into what's called the blind well of samsara, which means a pit that you cannot escape and that you cannot understand how you got into. Right? What is the real position of danger? You're really in danger when you don't know that you're in it. Right? If you're, you know, if there's a war going on and you're on the enemy side and you're, you know, very carefully hiding and you know you're in a very, very dangerous place, that's one thing. But if you don't know where you are, and you don't know that you're in the midst of so many enemies, and you're just walking down the street carelessly, then you're in further danger. Right? So this is what happens when one comes to this world. One comes into such a state of darkness that one is in a great state of discomfort, and they have no understanding of how they got there or how to get out of it. Dire circumstances. So Brahmite Brahmite Jari Kono Sadhu Baidopai Tar Mantra Upadeshe Pishachi Palai. But anyhow, wandering around in that darkness for so long, if someone comes upon a teacher, or in this analogy, a doctor, then the doctor can give some medicine, and then this disease or this blindness or this illusion or however we want to describe it can be dispelled. So we're wondering, we don't know who we are, we don't know what the purpose of life is, we don't know how to help ourselves. What's in our own best interest, we don't understand. We're thinking, I'll do this and this will help me. And that very action is harming us. That's our position. So, when we come across a doctor, you know, he will give us some, like, regimen. You know, he'll say, this is good for you, this is not. If you're interested in becoming healthy, do this and avoid that. So in that way, the scriptures, the sadhus, the gurus, those who are healthy, so to speak, those who are not under the influence of this illusion, they can come and say to you, you can't see it right now, but actually, this is good and this is bad. And if you start acting in this way, eventually, you'll be able to recognize that also. So, the root of this is revelation. That through the agency of a guru, through the example of a great devotee, through the writings of a devotee, the scriptures, some understanding, something, some feeling of this beautiful world, of this real world can appear within our hearts. Something can be transmitted to us, so to speak. And you say, well, why? What is the proof of that? Or why would that be the case? And we can say, in the language of Srila Sridhar Maharaj, that the Lord is engaged in the loving search for His lost servants. The Lord, He loves the soul. What He makes, He loves that. And He wants the best for that soul. And if He sees that soul harming itself, then He feels compassion and He desires to uplift that soul. But at the same time, He never, we can say, removes or overrides the freedom of the soul. He'll never remove the freedom. But He will try as far as possible to inspire that soul to use its freedom wisely. Once we heard someone ask Srila Govinda Maharaj about free will, if the soul has free will. And he explained, he said that Krishna, his focus is love. Love is the greatest joy. So Krishna himself, he wants to experience that joy of love. But what is the requisite for love? Within love, love implies the existence of a relationship. Two entities that are relating to each other, and between them, love is going on. And those entities must both not only be separate, but independent. They must be free. Wait, we will not say that, you know, I love my computer, or I love my video game, or I love the brick wall, or something that isn't actively making choices and decisions. Right? But when something has freedom and can from within choose to make an offering, choose to make a sacrifice for their beloved, that is necessary. That is love, is a conscious decision to make a sacrifice or an offering for the pleasure of another. In simpler language, Srila Sridhar Maharshi said, what is love? Self-sacrifice. Who do I love? Whose interest I value above my own. Typically in popular culture, what I love means what I find pleasing to me. I love pizza, I love ice cream, I love my mom because she gives me pizza and ice cream. What brings me pleasure? I love that. It's my favorite. It makes me happy. But that is illusion. Real love means who do I love? Whom I feel the desire to please. Who I want to bring pleasure to. Not who brings pleasure to me. But whom I care about so much that I'm ready to make a sacrifice of my time, energy, comfort, or whatever it may be, to bring satisfaction to them. That is whom I love. So, love means self-sacrifice. And self-sacrifice is a choice, right? There's a difference between someone who got killed and someone who gave their life for a cause, right? So, the basic point being, for love to take place, freedom is necessary. So Srila Govinda Maharaj explained that the Lord will never remove the freedom of a soul because He desires to have a loving relationship with that soul. For that reason, their freedom will always remain intact. However, right side by side to that freedom, He will exhibit very strong attraction. Right? They're not crossing the freedom, but nearly with the power of His attraction. And that is Krishna. Krishna means He who can attract anyone. Admaramash chamunayo nir grantiya piyurukrame kurvantya haitukim bhaktim itam bhuto gunau hari. How beautiful is Hari? He's so beautiful that even those who are self-satisfied leave their self-satisfaction to please Him. How beautiful is the Lord? He's so beautiful that you will forget about yourself out of appreciation for Him. How beautiful is He? He's so beautiful that He can inspire love within your heart. That is Krishna. So, Judeo-Christian traditions, a little more vague on this concept, right? Maybe a vague idea of God or some idea of an elderly man. Seldom are we thinking so many beautiful things about whom they are referring to. But Krishna, right, is the embodiment of attraction, beauty. Janmartilo paikam swayoga maya bhalam darshita grihita. Vishma param swasya chaso bagardhe param param bhushana bhushanangam. You'll see deities, they wear jewelry. Right? We're talking about Lakshmi Devi wearing a jewelry necklace. You'll see Krishna plays the flute. Krishna has a peacock feather. Krishna has bangles, yellow dhoti, and not only guilty, but very perfect fold and like what do you call it? Like drape of the cloth. You know, very, very, so many wonderful features and ornaments upon him. Right? And we see in this world, persons interested in attracting attention to themselves will make use of so many ornaments, right? In order to increase the degree to which they can attract the attention of others. But, and throughout the scriptures you'll find the sadhus praising the beauty of Krishna's ornaments so much. They love Krishna's ornaments. They love Krishna's ornaments, right? And those ornaments, they bring remembrance of Krishna. They're very fondly attached. Like we heard one story, there was one devotee, great devotee, and he was a doctor. And a very, very good doctor. This is a devotee from 500 years ago, time when Muslims were ruling Bengal. And then the king, one Muslim king, became very ill. And they called this doctor, because he was a very good doctor. They knew he's something Vaishnav Hindu guy. They didn't care. Because he was an expert doctor, they brought him to care for the king. And then the king was sitting, maybe on a place like this, that building there, like a veranda type place with a high ledge. That type of place, the king is sitting. And this devotee comes. And then he's caring for the king and assessing the condition and recommending medicine and da 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 and trying to comfort the king. And in the course of doing so, the day went on and it grew very warm. So then someone came to fan the king. Okay? And when they went to fan the king, the fan was a fan of peacock feathers. Peacock feathers. Right? And as this devotee, he's discussing all these things with the king and taking care of him, then suddenly, looking at the king and seeing the peacock fan, his mind went to Krishna. And he's a Muslim king, right? He's a demon king. But anyhow, peacock fan, seeing this, and he's remembering Krishna, and then he fell off the, he like fell from this thing, thinking of remembering Krishna, and fell. Right? And then the people, you're okay, what happened? And then that man, he had to lie. Right? We heard this morning sometimes, some little Vaishnavs are a little sneaky sometimes. So, you know, he said, oh, no, I also have one condition. Sometimes I have trouble breathing, I can lose consciousness. Don't mind. So, anyway, one example. Simply even seeing something that is an ornament of Krishna can produce such intense feelings of attraction and love for Krishna within the heart of a devotee. But yet, Krishna here is described, it says his human-like form that he shows is so astonishingly beautiful. It's so beautiful that it ornaments his ornaments. Right? If you want to be very sharp, right, you can't say Krishna wears ornaments. Because if Krishna is the embodiment of beauty, how can anything make him more beautiful? It's not possible. Right? So here it says, Krishna's, he showed Janmartali Lo Payakam Svayoga Maya Bhalam Dharshayita Prakasha Grihita. Means he assumed a form where he showed the full power, his spiritual power, Svayoga, like the full power of Yogamaya means, if anyone knows that term. He took a form that showed the full power of his Yogamaya, means the full power of how attractive he can appear. Right? And assuming that form, right, he can astonish any living entity. He can thrill any living being by showing that form. So he, that full expression of his power must be greater than anything coming to ornament it. And then, anyhow, there's other discussions of this sloka. Another way it can be read is that those who are proud of their beauty, they are also astonished by the beauty of Krishna. So, you know, when we hear descriptions of the beauty of Krishna, or we think about that, it is not only like, so to speak, art or something for us to enjoy. Like, oh, here is a beautiful scene. We like to look at that, right? But it is beauty that has a magnetic power. Means coming in connection with this power, some transformation will occur within the heart. And one will feel compelled. Like one will feel, so to speak, captivated by this beauty. And impelled to serve Krishna. So Krishna does not remove the free will of the soul, but he makes himself so attractive that you can't resist. And then too, you know, out of the like unbridled enthusiasm of the heart to express one's appreciation for the beauty of Krishna and try to bring some satisfaction to him. And that is called bhakti, that is called prema. And that experience is the fulfillment of life. And it increases infinitely. Goes on forever, so to speak. So that is what is being cultured in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we can specifically say that is what is being cultured in the hearts of our gurus. And if we have some connection with them, if we can render some service to them, then we are also in the proximity of that supreme reality. And that is our hope, that is our solace, that is our joy. That by connection with our Gurudev, by connection with the Vaishnavas, we are in the immediate proximity of Krishna. So these are like overriding principles. And then within the chanting of the holy name, or the hearing of the scriptures, or the worship of the deity, or all of these particular activities that we go on, then these principles are like waves expressed within them. So I'll pause there. Does anyone have any comment or question? Yes.
Is this free will? I totally understood that you have the choice to choose for him or not, and that for the rest, many things are preordained in life. And also the phrase, Krishna takes charge of his devotees. How should I see that connected to that?
What was the last part? Krishna takes charge?
Of his devotees.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, we can say that we have free will, but it is minute. That is, you know, further explanation. We have some free choice, but the extent to which that choice can determine the condition of my environment is very, very small, right? I can choose to put on a hat to keep myself warm, but I cannot choose that the sun will come out of the clouds, right? Little something I can do to try to keep myself warm, but how much can I control the environment? Practically nothing. So according to our karma, why are all these, but from a deeper perspective, why do we find ourselves in any particular circumstance that is coming to us as the result of our previous choices and actions? So in not an immediate way, but in a long-term way, it is the natural result of my choices that I have ended up in this place at this time. So immediately we may not be able to, you know, reconstruct the environment, but by the general course that we plot in our life, gradually we will enter a different atmosphere. Gradually the circumstances that befall us will change as our course of action and our course of choices changes. So gradually, from within the heart, we come to change our environment. So in that way, simultaneously, we have some free choice, but also are at the under the influence of the Lord's will. And the Lord, right, Srila Sridhar Maharshi would explain the laws of physics or the fixed principles that were taught. They are like minor things. In his vision, to say, you know, it is impossible that this hat will fall up, you know, he said, That is not such a fixed law. At any moment, by Krishna's will, anything can happen. If he, once the Krishna factor enters the equation, it outweighs any other element in the equation. Right? You know, it's like, you can add so many different numbers together and get different fixed sums. But if you put the infinity integer into any part of the equation, the answer is infinity. Right? So as soon as you factor Krishna into any equation, then anything can happen. And why does Krishna do what he does? You can say, well, then everything just depends on his will. Well, why does Krishna do what he does? What makes Krishna make one choice or another? Right? He is also controlled by the love of his devotee. And he also, aham bhakta prarino hya svatantra iva jiva, says, I am controlled by the love of my devotee. It's as though I'm dependent on them, that I'm under the influence of them. So, you know, the choices that a devotee makes, or the desires that a devotee has in their heart, they may come to pass by the power of the loving relationship existing between the soul and the Lord. So in that way, we have free will, but yet the Lord is also, considered omniscient, omnipotent. Anyhow, our discussion will not be so satisfying to a philosopher, in the sense that ultimately jiva tattva is a chintya, and how it is that his will is independent of Krishna's will, but yet Krishna is omnipotent, is a philosophical contradiction. And devotees relish that, and they call that, you know, the love between the Lord and the soul. So, the right where the part that irritates the philosopher, that's right the same part that the devotee starts to taste. As soon as it's starting the friction on, oh, it doesn't quite logically compute, that's right where it becomes relishable. Jai Shrila Bhakti Rakhak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. So this is like a very zoomed out picture of things that we're discussing today. And then, you know, so many specifics and the significance and beauty of all the things within our culture, they take form, so to speak, based on these principles of devotion, sacrifice, surrender, will, love, all of these things. They're like, you know, if you're going to make sabji, like you have masala, you have oil, you have vegetables. These are just like crude elements. And then you start to put them all together and then you get some wonderful things. So how love, will, sacrifice and things are expressed through the Vaishnav culture, that is, you know, our life, so to speak, or the life of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So, you know, along these lines, then so many things can be explained. Why we do this, why we dress like that, why we like this, why we don't like that, etc. Okay, anything else, or shall we close? Everyone have an exciting task for the day, a goal to accomplish?
And I have one.
Okay. Service.
Because we hear it's very rare, and at the same time, so important, and paramount.
Well, as we mentioned, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he said, service means self-sacrifice. That I will consciously choose that my time, energy, resources, body, mind, senses will be engaged in bringing satisfaction to my Lord. That is service. That somehow what I do will result in the pleasure of the beloved. That is, you know, Saraswati Thakur, he said, what is seva? Whatever brings pleasure to the Lord. That, you know, what is service? Something that results in satisfaction of someone. So, to do that, or anything that produces that is fair to be called service. Now, does that mean we can do anything and everything and that will produce the Lord's pleasure? No. Because we are revealed in the scriptures and by the devotees that Krishna, he likes certain things. The Lord, he likes certain things. Right? So, for example, the Lord, when he appeared as Mahaprabhu, he said that the way you can satisfy me best is by Naam Sankirtan. You can chant my name. In the company of one another, you can chant my name. That would be the most pleasing to me. And you can care for one another. That would be very pleasing to me. I love you all so much. And I desire so much to care for you all. And when I see you caring for one another, then I am completely fulfilled. What I really desire to do in my heart, when I see all of you doing that already, then I am fully satisfied. And, you know, for those who fail to appreciate such things, for those who are suffering, to extend this to them, that is also very pleasing to me. So the Lord Mahaprabhu's teachings, Jive Doya, Name Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva. We together, we will glorify the Lord, we will care for one another, and we will be kind to those who will hopefully soon come to appreciate such things. So, there is nothing actually than service, right? The only question is, who do we serve, right? We either serve our body, our mind, our mother, our father, our friend, the TV, the advertisement, you know. Whatever you do, it's service to somebody, you know. Like, why did you smash that mosquito? Because it's biting you and you're trying to protect your body. You're constantly rendering some service to something. So the question is not should we serve or do we serve, but who shall we serve? And the answer is Guru Vaishnava and Bhagavan. We should serve them. But as Srila Acharya Maharaj was explaining this morning, what hope do you have of bringing satisfaction to them if you can't even maintain yourself? He's recently been... I know where he... There's some funny origin to this phrase, but he's been using it lately. You know, that in order to render service to others, we also have to have a certain minimum level of functionality. So it's also necessary to maintain that in order to be able to render service. But our focus, our purpose, must really not be ourselves, but upon our master. So all of these things in the culture, the way we dress, the way we eat, the way we talk, the way we think, what we say, what we do, what we celebrate, everything. We do it, why? Because we're told it's pleasing to the Lord and His devotees. Why do you wear this on your forehead? Because Krishna likes it. Why do you wear this type of robe? Because that's what Mahaprabhu said. Why do you fast on this particular day? Because Mahaprabhu liked that. Why did you go to this place? Because this is the favorite place Mahaprabhu liked to be. Why do you engage in this? Because Mahaprabhu said everyone should do that. And why do you do it over here? Because Gurudev likes that way. And why do you cook like this? Because Gurudev's favorite. And why like this? Because it's pleasing to who we want to please. Every last detail of our life is stipulated and determined by what is pleasing to our gurus and the Lord. Every last detail of our activities. You know, and that's where the devotees, they get into that. They want to like very finely express and do what is just the way that they like. You know, whether it's poetry or other finer, you know, elements of art, you know, that they can tune those things to be just exactly the way they know is pleasing to, you know, the Lord or to their guru. That is like their favorite activity in life. So, in the language of Srila Govinda Maharaj that we hear very frequently from Srila Acharya Maharaj, many people serve, but very few have attachment for service. Which is to say, attachment to serving Krishna, or attachment to serving Guru. Everyone is doing service, but very few have attachment to divine service or real self-sacrifice. So our, you could say, the fundamental thing we're cultivating is that attachment. By having the association of one who has that attachment, we're also gradually acquiring it and aspiring for that. And as we saw last night, if someone is maybe not showing so much attachment, then crack! You need more, right? And that is divine. That is a real thing, actually. Not only, you know, guru will be who can, you know, tell you some poetry and give you a wink and be very cute. You know, that is not the guru, right? Saraswati Thakur, he said, a guru is not a flatterer. Someone who flatters you, that is not guru. Someone who comes and forcibly inspires you to be exclusively devoted to the Lord, they are a guru. Right? So if we do wrong and we're reprimanded for that, that is our good fortune. And to know that we have someone there to reprimand us, that is the peace in our hearts. To think, oh, I have some little idea about Krishna, some little idea about all these divine things, but if I forgot them, if I stopped caring about them, would anyone say anything? If I live in my country in a faraway place, and one day I just decided, oh, I'm not going to engage in these spiritual things, I'm just going to work my job and watch TV and get a retirement plan, nobody would do anything. I could just easily do that. That freedom, that openness is scary. It's sad for the Vaishnava, right? But to be somewhere and see that if you're even like little bit, or maybe you didn't actually and it only was said that you were, then crack! Then you're thinking, yes, I am safe. I am protected. The Lord's, you know, guardianship is upon me. That is my peace in my heart. So although every last thing is part of it, right? Bitter, sweet, rough, gentle. It's all necessary in particular phases of the process. Okay, well, we're going on long. I know I have a lot to do today. I'm sure you do all too. If not, please find something to do and happily do it. Let's chant.